Question number two is the non-transparency of clinical trial data. Is the scientific evidence derived from clinical trials accurate and reasonably complete? And the conventional wisdom that most, if not almost all doctors believe, is that the scientific evidence that we docs get, that we are taught to adopt as credible knowledge and implement in our patient care, that scientific knowledge, that the science that we read in our medical journals has been peer reviewed. And the peer reviewers have examined the data and have reviewed the study and the analysis of the study, and they've signed off. They've given their seal of approval to the report of the clinical trial before it's ever published. But it's not so simple as that. What the doctors can see, this is a schematic drawing, and this is a good doctor. He's got his doctor bag and his rowboat, and his rowboat is named Scientific Evidence. It's very romantic. And he's looking with his telescope at the publicly available information upon which he's going to base, he or she is going to base his or her decisions about how to take care of their patients. And what are they looking at? They're looking at peer-reviewed journal articles. They're looking at clinical practice guidelines. They are, we must be honest, looking at drug company marketing. And that basically, that it formed, that's what the public information is comprised of. And that doctor in his rowboat titled Scientific Evidence believes he's seeing the scientific evidence, but he's looking at an iceberg. And he's not looking at what's under the water, beneath the water, the waterline and the iceberg, because that's where the real information is. Down here, we see reams of paper, file cabinets full of paper that are collected in clinical trials where the results of each patient visit are recorded and stored and then turned into electronic patient-level data sets, so that they can be manipulated and searched electronically. And then those electronic patient-level data sets are turned into clinical study reports, which present the tabulated data from the electronic patient-level data sets into the outcome measures and the safety measures that are pre-specified in the protocols for the clinical study. These clinical study reports are between 1,000 and 3,000 pages long. And I spent over 10 years in litigation in big national pharmaceutical litigation against the pharmaceutical companies for misrepresenting or not representing the harms of the drugs and misrepresenting the efficacy of drugs. And the first thing I would go to as an expert in litigation would be the clinical study report. And I want to say parenthetically that when I was in litigation, I would get access to about 20 million documents in each case. We would, as an expert, I had to sign a confidentiality agreement, but I got access to the executives and the science, the leaders in science and the marketing leaders in each company that was being sued. I got access to their hard drives, their computer hard drives. And as an expert in litigation, I could figure out what was actually going on. And this is an enormously privileged position where that doctors don't have the opportunity to have unless they their career drifts in the direction of being an expert in litigation. But I could figure out what was going on. And when I was an unpaid consultant to the FBI and the Department of Justice, I had figured out in civil litigation what an arthritis drug how an arthritis drug had covered up, or the manufacturer of an arthritis drug had covered up the risk of the drug causing cardiovascular events, like Vioxx. It's a cousin of Vioxx. I figured that out, but I couldn't tell anybody because the suit was settled. And when a lawsuit is settled with a pharmaceutical company, the data gets sealed. They can't be made public. They're not made public. So the data is sealed. So I knew what was going on, but I couldn't make it public. But I decided that this was so important that I would pick up the phone and tell the department, call the D Department of Justice blind, and tell them that I knew a lot about this drug, but I couldn't tell them. unless I was subpoenaed. So a few days later, a federal marshal came out to deliver a federal subpoena to tell me that I would be at FBI headquarters and I would bring my computer and I would share what I knew about the drug. And when I went to FBI headquarters at the appointed time, there were FBI agents, there were FBI lawyers, there were Department of Justice lawyers, and there were Department of Justice lawyers in Washington on speakerphone. And they interviewed me for about 4 hours, and they asked me really tough questions. They wanted to make sure what I was saying was defensible and that I had the documents. Now I was under subpoena, so I could show them the documents and show them my analyses. And they listened well, and they said, thank you very much. And I heard nothing more after that until about 6 months later, when I read in the newspaper that the drug company had pled guilty to a felony and settled on a fine of $1.195 billion. It was the largest fine in the history, criminal fine in the history of the United States for any matter. But still, the data remained settled, and still, I can't share the data. So money changed hands. But the really important goal that I wanted to achieve was to inform doctors and the public about how they were being deceived when they couldn't see they couldn't see the iceberg under the water, and they couldn't see the real data. And people who were able to couldn't do independent analyses of this data and show that the cardiovascular risk was significant in this drug, and the drug company had failed to report it. So the initial response of docs is, well, we read our journals, and I'm a smart man or woman, and so we read our journals and we keep up to date, and that's how we practice medicine. But in truth, when you look at the actual data from the studies and compare that to what's published in the journals, only 23% of the important outcomes, from an average of 23% of the important outcomes of clinical trials that are reported in medical journals, only 23% of the important outcomes are reported in the journal articles. Only 19% of the benefit outcomes and 26% of the harm outcomes. So doctors who think they're performing responsibly as learned intermediaries by reading their journals and looking at the guidelines and participating in continuing education, think that they are able to fulfill their social role as learned intermediaries for their patients and sift through all the scientific evidence and bring their patients the best of scientific medicine. They can't do it. And let me present, oh, I'm sorry, before I get there. So this is the incomplete reporting of harms and benefits in medical journals. And the problem is, this data is from Germany, that only a quarter of the new drugs, 25% of the new drugs that are approved, are actually significantly better than previously available therapy. Only 25%. So you might say, why don't doctors just pick out the 25% that are most effective if they read their journals? But we just learned that the journals aren't reporting it. And in fact, it's going in the other direction. This is a very clever study that looked at the association between the efficacy of drugs and manufacturers spending on marketing.